And of course, David Bloom, our guest, and this time we'll take your phone calls this hour on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about alcohol can be a gas. And welcome back, David Bloom with us. David, what kind of a response do you get generally where you speak and places you go?
Oh, well, you know, basically, what the response we get are people who want to do something, because there's a lot of people out there. I mean, for instance, your buddy Heimberger talks about peak oil, you know, and he's kind of a good speaker in a way, but he's typical, which is people are very good at defining the problem. They can say, gosh, we don't have enough jobs. That's just horrible. And it's going to cause all these disasters. And gosh, energy is going up and it's going to cause all these problems in our culture, and things won't get delivered to the store. And so, you know, I think people are just really tired of being told what they already know, which is we got problems. The reason why I think I do so well with crowds and they pay attention to you and they pay attention to I is that we're talking about how do we go out there and fix it ourselves? Because, you know,
nobody else will.
No one else. Look tomorrow night at the debate. Now, what are the two things that are on people's mind with $5 gas right now, or just about $5 gas? It's jobs and energy. If those guys don't talk about that tomorrow night, you better start, you know, getting out there and build your still and start making your own fuel, because they will have said, we give up. We don't have an answer. We won't talk about it. And we're accepting that we're going to be ruled by the oil companies and we're going to have to pay whatever they say. You know, and that's what will happen if you hear silence on the subject of renewable energy in this next debate, and of course there was nothing talked about in the last debate, and then the final debate. If they don't squarely address how we are going to deal with the declining amount of oil between now and 2030, you know, the International Energy Agency says we're going to be down to 10% of the oil we have today by 2030, unless we come up with undiscovered sources.
Or I'm right about abiotic oil.
Well, but that's undiscovered sources, George. We got to find those or we're cooked, right? So, you know, every solution needs to be worked on, sure. In fact, my buddy Tom is saying, reminding me that we need to nominate you, George, for president.
Well, you never know. It's a little late for that.
I'll be your vice president if you want to do it.
And I put you in charge of the energy. You'd be our energy czar. But by the way, I would do away with all these czar titles.
Good. They're gone. Czar, is this not a Russian, like?
I just don't like it.
Yeah.
We're going back to the old way.
Right.
All right, let's go to the phones. Wild card line, Eddie in Hawaii. Welcome to the show, Eddie, where your gasoline is how much, Eddie?
Oh, way too much. So it's up like close to five. Over five. Hey, I was talking to a friend about this, and he said that we're not allowed to still, we can't do the stills here in Hawaii. Do you know, is that true, David?
No, that's not true at all. I've talked to many government officials in Hawaii over time, and they actually have, unless they've been recently repealed, they have tax credits for you to produce alcohol in Hawaii and government loan programs to help you guys build stills there, because the government has realized that 90%+ of their energy is imported and almost that much food. And so you guys are kind of, you're at the end of the delivery route. What can we say? So basically, there's a lot of move on the part of politicians in Hawaii to at least advocate for, you know, self-produced energy in Hawaii. And you guys need it in the worst way. Now, there's different ways we can go about it, because all you guys in Hawaii, well, you poop like everyone else, and all that sewage has to go somewhere. So a lot of it gets pumped into the ocean. We're working right now with scientists that are taking samples from us where we are turning ocean algae, big ocean algae, right? Not little microscopic stuff that loves to eat that sewage once you guys pump it into the ocean, and make that into alcohol. It makes all these weird sugars like mannose and galactans and all these weird things you can hardly pronounce, but they are carbohydrates, and we are working with them to find natural organisms that eat those and make alcohol. And so we've had a lot of people from Hawaii take our courses and buy our book. Oh, my God, we get so many people from Hawaii trying to figure out some way of beating those prices. And alcohol can be a gas is probably in virtually every library in Hawaii.
All right, next up, but thanks for that call. Let's go to David in Hollywood, California. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George. How are you?
Good, David.
Hello, David. How are you?
Great. I'm doing wonderful.
Yeah, you know, I have a friend in Texas, and his father's in the oil business. He told me that, you know, the manipulation of the barrel of oil is done on Wall Street, and that and I didn't hear you mention anything about that, and I was wondering, you know, how the... you know, because the gases are prices of gas in the Middle East are very low. You can go to Mexico, it's like $2.50. And here in the United States, it seems like the oil companies, you know, the only thing that they really care about is their yachts and their whores, you know, because this is why they're punishing the people who are already struggling in this country very, very strongly. And now Goldman Sachs is manipulating the price of the barrel, which the oil companies haven't paid more than $50 in 10 years. And so I wanted to ask you, what do you think of that? Because these high prices on Wall Street, they don't reflect what's really going on.
All right. What do you think of that, David?
Well, you're partially right there. You know, basically, remember Tony, you know, the head of BP who went sailing off in his yacht when he got fired for screwing up the cleanup so bad. So your image of oil companies being disconnected from the rest of us is probably on the money. Now, are Wall Street speculators to blame for the price of oil? Well, I'm sure they play part of the role because everybody will try to make money on a commodity, something they don't think there's enough of, you know, and then people try to monopolize what there is and they charge you for access to it. So sure, you know, those guys are out there messing with the price a little bit. But what's happening now in the world is that the OPEC countries have to get a high price for their oil. Back in the old days, they made so much profit on the oil and their populations were so low that it really wasn't important. You go, well, what does their population have to do with it? Well, if you're the Saudi royal family and you don't want the rabble to revolt and throw you out of power, basically you give a check to everyone every year for a share of the oil profit. And so that way you keep revolution down. So it's now estimated that the Saudis, who have the biggest, you know, production of oil in the Middle East, they need to get $100 a barrel to float their political, you know...
Sure, their lifestyle.
Their whole, well, not just their lifestyle, but to keep the average age of 14-year-old and 15-year-old males from revolting.
Yeah, no, you're right.
No work.
They're buying them off.
So I mean, in Alaska, the oil companies send a check to every resident of Alaska every year to buy them off. You know, it's not like just these other countries. It happens here. I mean, and
but by the way, I agree with that. I mean, if oil is in a country and they're making money on it, they should share it with the people.
Oh, well, yeah, George, in California here, Chevron and the oil companies have never paid any royalties on oil ever in California, but they sure do pay a lot to politicians to run for office.
They do. Drew is in Albany, Georgia. Go ahead, Drew. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. David, I've got your book right now on loan from the library and going through it, and I find the amount of information in it is pretty much overwhelming in trying to go through it. Is there anywhere that there's maybe like a condensed, like quick start guide or anything to get started
the
with
the Cliff Note version, David?
You know, this was a big debate we had when we first put the book together. The book is 600 pages, basically. There's practically a photograph or a drawing on every page. I mean, this is, you know, a very complete manual, and there hasn't been one attempted like this since about 1908, when there was another alcohol fuel revolution. Now, yes, it can look overwhelming. I mean, there's whole sections on vehicle conversion, making your distillery, farming, growing crops, converting waste. But you know something? You don't have to do all that. You only have to do a piece of it, because what this is about is revolution. And that means a revolution means you work together to get out from under the corporate yoke. So you, down in Albany, Georgia, you know, you've got good weather for sorghum. Now, maybe you don't have land, but there's, you know, or maybe kudzu, which, you know, you see growing over the tops of houses, and it makes a huge starchy root. So, you know, you've got surplus sunlight and water in Georgia, and somebody has surplus land that they're growing hay on because there's nothing else to do with the land. So, you know, someone else would farm that sorghum for you, and it's just like sugarcane. You squeeze it and get the juice out, and you make alcohol with it. you know, that's not a problem. And so maybe you're not a welder, but someone is, and you need to find your friend who's a welder who just got out of the service and has been, you know, fixing tanks or whatever for a living. Now he needs work. So you get him to help you build the still from my book, Alcohol Can Be a Gas. You know, maybe you're not a truck driver, but someone else is, and you can pick up with the, you know, the economy the way it is, and, you know, construction the way it is. There's a fuel truck out there that used to service some construction company. You can pick up for $5,000-$7,000. You know, now if you got 10 or 15 people, it doesn't look so hard to get that truck. Maybe the company who's got the truck has to let go of it because they don't have enough work, but they have a lot of vehicles that need fuel. So, hey, give us the truck. We'll deliver you fuel once we start making it. The point is, Americans are ingenious. That's why in 200 years we got where we are. So you need to stop thinking about doing it yourself because that's overwhelming. You want to think about doing it with other people. And if you're the you know, the kind of entrepreneurial person, you got to think, wow, I'd be a popular guy if I'm selling $3 a gallon fuel I'm making from kudzu, you know? So maybe that's what you need to do is organize the business and get other people involved. The point is there are many ways to go about doing this, but all of them require interdependence. And that's the only way we have to live in this country. We can't expect mommy and daddy government to go ahead and try to take care of us because mommy's now working for the corporations and daddy's out of work. So, you know, these guys don't know how to help us, and it's just us and the chickens down here doing it for ourselves. And you know what? We're up to it. We can do it. And my piece in this thing is to make sure that you've got the knowledge you need to work with your friends and neighbors. We have DVDs that help explain it to people, so you can get people together using one of those as a place of conversation. Just go to our website, Alcohol Can Be a Gas, and you can get that stuff. But we're also going to be building the equipment for the people, you know, who want to be able to do this as a business and tell the oil companies in their community where to get off. Where do you put the station? Heck, just find a dying mall and rent a corner of that asphalt to put an above-ground tank and sell your fuel there.
How many gallon tank do you need down there?
Well, heck, you know, a fuel truck usually has 4,500 gallons in it, and a double has about 9,500. So anything between 4,500 and 9,500 will work, and there's lots of used tanks floating around that have come off of sites. And if you have a group of people together, the USDA will finance the putting in of your stations. One of the financial supporters of our Bloom Distillation Company just got a USDA grant in Missouri, not too far from you, George, just an hour and a half north, to put a station in.
For the whole amount?
70-something percent, I believe, you know, between the state and the federal tax credit and incentives, because the USDA knows that if you're selling alcohol, you're getting crops from farmers, and farmers are making more money.
Now, is this a loan, or is this just free money?
They do both. They do tax credits, which banks...
Which you can sell.
Which you can sell to banks, and they also do loans. You know, loans for about 50%, tax credit for most of the rest.
Amazing.
And the oil companies have been trying to kill those like you can't believe, because they know... If somebody's buying alcohol for $3, 35 of their friends are going to know next week. Because what do people brag about? Oh, I found fuel for 20, you know, 5 cents less.
Can you put 100% ethanol into an engine right now?
You can, but those have to be flex fuel engines typically. If you don't have a flex fuel car, we sell conversion computers that plug into your car and make your car a flex fuel vehicle, because it's really just software.
How much are the computers?
Depends on how many cylinders you have, $300 or $400. But when you look at the price of fuel, and if you make your own, that's a pretty quick payback. Now, you know, as we've talked about before in your show, George, we always make it good for the Coast to Coast listeners. For the first 50 people that want to decide not to use gasoline anymore and or not use it as much and put a kit on their car, we always have a discount for your guys, George. So the first 50 people that want to tell the oil companies to shove off, we give a $50 discount on that $300 or $400 kit so that they can slap it on their car.
Do you have to be mechanically inclined?
You know, if you're not mechanically inclined, talk to your mechanic. It's like an hour job, you know, for a complex car and a 10-minute job for a four-cylinder. I mean, we have a DVD that we give you with it that shows Ed Begley, you know, out there with a socket wrench and a screwdriver, and he converts his Prius to alcohol in 7 minutes.
Let's go to Gina, truck driving in Florida. Gina, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi there.
Nice talking to you.
You doing? Turn your radio down and then go ahead.
Hi, it's nice talking to you finally. I am a first-time caller.
Thank you.
I'm a listener. My question is, I am just dying to know, us being truck drivers, and we own our own company, and fuel is killing us.
That's right.
It's killing a lot of the small trucking businesses. So my question would be, in the book, do you discuss using this fuel for diesels? And if that is not something that's in the works now, how far into the future do you see it?
Okay, Gina. Well, let me tell you that in Brazil, big over-the-road trucks like yours have conversion kits that will replace, it depends on the kit, up to 80% of the diesel with alcohol. And they do that by injecting the alcohol after the turbocharger into the air supply. And so your diesel injection pump is turned down to about 20% of its usual output. And that's because the diesel is needed to start the ignition in the diesel engine, and then it takes the alcohol with it. There are other ways to do it. We have six ways of converting diesels in the Alcohol Can Be a Gas book. Some are really easy, and some are more complex, depending on the kind of diesel engine that you're going to be using. Now, I happen to have a one-cylinder diesel, big old one-lunger, in my sailboat, which I, you know, got because basically there was a lien sale, and so now I have a little sailboat. And this one-lung diesel runs on a combination of biodiesel and alcohol just fine. I haven't done anything to convert it. And I'm telling you, you know, when you fire up a diesel on a boat, it's kind of gross because this big, oily, black plume comes out of the back and just covers the water. You go, oh, God, I didn't really want to do that, you know. But when I'm running it on alcohol with biodiesel, there's almost no carbon in the exhaust at all. And alcohol-powered over-the-road trucks have gone over 1,000,000 miles before they tore them down and found out that they were still virtually new on the inside. They throw them back together, can run them another 1,000,000 miles. Archer Daniels Midland did that with some of their over-the-road trucks. And what they did is they just replaced the glow plugs, the hot resistance heater that you need to have in the manifold to start a diesel on a cold morning. Well, they found out that if they just left them on all the time, they wired them so they didn't turn off, that hot spot was enough to get the diesel to fire at the right time with pure alcohol, 95% alcohol, and only 5% diesel in it for lubrication of the injection pump. So people have done many different ways. Many of them work. And in the book, we show six different ways to do it. And we are going to be working with a Brazilian company over the next couple of years with Bloom Distillation to come out with an aftermarket injection kit that will put the that will hook into your system. You'll put a separate tank on the truck, which you can do on a big diesel truck, and you can replace 90% or more of the fuel you use with alcohol, which is a fraction of the cost of diesel.
Oh, that's dramatic because, you know, as diesel hits, and I'm sure it probably has, $5 a gallon. I mean, that kills truck drivers.
It kills business.
Yeah.
Everything is delivered. Everything depends on trucking to happen in America. And so if you want a product, it's coming by truck. If you need a part for the machine you're building, it comes by truck. You know, and so every time the price of fuel goes up, the price of everything goes up because every truck driver has to accommodate that price of fuel.
All right, we're coming back with final phone calls in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM with David Bloom. We'll be back. On our next program, Marshall Clarfill joins us as we talk about the Anunnaki. That's right. Get ready for that. And when we come back with David Bloom, your final phone calls from all over the place on Coast to Coast AM. You know, David, you've always been enthusiastic, but you seem sky high now. It seems like we're getting closer to getting this stuff resolved.
Oh, yeah. Things that are happening for us are just amazing. The opening, you know, this spring, you know, we have a lot of work with this winter with our AFU, our Alcohol Fuel University, where we'll be able to actually train people from around the world to do this. You know, we're so excited about that. And, of course, the progress of bloom distillation and getting our prototypes done. And actually, there's a lot of people from Coast who've signed up on our mailing list to be, you know, notified right away when stills are available, because they want to go into business and you know, go head-to-head with Big Oil in their community. And, you know...
And what's the licensing again? Why don't you quickly go through that?
Well, I had a hand in this back in the 80s, but basically the licensing for our distilleries at this point is, if you're going to produce fuel commercially, in other words, do a small business, so you're doing more than 5,000 gallons a year. So if you do less than 5,000, it's a one-page permit. If it's the same permit, 1.5 pages, but you have to pay a small license fee up to 500,000 gallons a year. In other words, the government is not standing in your way on this. And there's only 3 people at the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms that process these permits. If you call up and tell them, oh, yeah, red alcohol can be a guest, to go, oh, yeah, yeah, Dave's booked. Sure, okay, well.
Done.
Here's how you fill it out. Not a problem. It's really simple. And they're all really nice people. So, you know, don't get, you know, this, don't get in their face. They're really nice guys at this particular branch of the government, you know. So, you know, there's nothing but, you know, people who want to see this happen on the front lines. You know, you can worry about the politicians, and, you know, you can either try to make them lead, or you can just do it yourself. And, you know, my basic feeling is, if we're enough of us are doing this ourselves, at some point the government's going to have to say, oh, this is popular. You know, maybe we should support this. But, you know, we don't need that. We just need to be left alone to do our thing. And luckily, at this point, that's, you know, the American farmer and the American Corn Growing Association has really made it impossible for the politicians to shut this down, because, you know, the farm vote is important. And, you know, although the forces of evil killed the farm bill this year, next year, after this election, we need to all push for renewable energy produced by our farmers next year in the Farm Bill, because Dianne Feinstein out in California, here she is whining because of the high price of gas and wants to start an investigation into manipulation of gas prices, when it was her fault that they took out the benefits for alcohol in the last year and a half. And now she's complaining that there's no competition for oil companies. You know, now our governor in California just had to permit dirtier gasoline to replace the stuff that we normally have, because he wants to get the price down, because it's politically unpopular to have high gas prices. This is Governor Moonbeam. This is, you know, Jerry Brown, who was Mr. Green years ago, and he was backed into the corner, just like they backed Georgia into the corner when you and I broke that story, George, a couple of years ago, when they claimed that some hurricanes knocked out pipelines to North Carolina, Georgia, and Tennessee. And the, even though the rest of the country was paying $1.33, people in those states were getting shorted on gasoline, and they were being paying $4.50 a gallon, and the press would not report on that around the country. And you and I broke that story. I mean, it was like a huge open secret right in front of everybody. 3 whole states paying way more than the rest of the country, and nobody was reporting on it. So, you know, that's how big the lie can be. And it's really hard to get the word in front of people. So what we're hoping to do is take, we've already produced this. We have a 1-hour DVD we've created, which is kind of like the show we're doing tonight. You know, it talks a lot about aquafuel, how to make it, et cetera. And what we're hoping people will do is show that in their community, to their friends and neighbors, whatever. And with the modern miracle of technology, when we do this on a scheduled basis, people at that meeting will be able, via their computer, ask me questions, and by video, I will be able to reply to those questions. And we're going to start doing that every week around the country for as many groups that want to get together at the same time.
Super. So, let's take some final calls here for you, David. Marty in Lancaster, California. Go ahead, Marty.
Yeah, hi, David. I always enjoy your shows. Me and the legacy of Buckminster Fuller are inventing living reed down here in the basement with the chickens.
Yay, all right.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, I watched a tree get sawed down across the street from me, and I talked to the guys, and they chopped up and chipped all the branches, and we're taking it all the way out of town to a dump to dump it. I thought this could be a very good resource of making alcohol and putting that otherwise green clippings and leaves and stuff to use. And I wondered, if I were to use that to make alcohol, what kind of turnaround time it would take to, from start to finish, to see alcohol making from wood chips and leaves, and if I could accelerate that with some solar heating.
Well, you know, the thing is, although cellulose or plant fiber, you know, the same stuff your jeans are made of or paper, whatever, that is a carbohydrate, but it's really hard to break down. I mean, you saw that tree standing there for all those years, and it was tough, right? So trying to break that down into sugar and make it into alcohol is still not a small-scale process. And so you really, you know, the best you can do with that chipped wood is to use it as a heat source to run your still. You know, in other words, that's important too. But you need a different kind of carbohydrate, something with sugar or starch in it, to easily make into alcohol. There's a lot of talk about cellulosic alcohol, and for the most part, it's a red herring to try to do something that's almost impossible so that we don't pay attention to what we can do today. And so I would look around in your community. Lancaster, you're out there in the desert. Heck, if you have somebody with desert land, you can grow prickly pear. You can use mesquite, you know. There's even waste products from almond growing, which may not be quite as far south as you are. Orange waste from down in the orange areas down there. All those things can be made into alcohol. I think you want to look for what agricultural surplus there is, and there's gobs of it.
There sure is. Let's go east. Rusty is in Baton Rouge. Hey, Rusty, go ahead.
Hello. Good evening or good morning, Mr. Norrie and Mr. Bloom. I've listened to the program for quite a while, and, you know, I have concerns about the growing cost of, you know, fuel and whatnot. However, has anyone given thought to maybe adjust your driving habits slightly, maybe slow down a little extra before red light, a light that you know is going to turn red that you have to stop at?
Well, you know, those are the common sense things, but you know what, David? They've talked about that for years. Nobody does that.
I know a few people who do that, who pride themselves on coasting as much as they can. And yeah, they're able to extract a lot more mileage per gallon of fuel. But in the greater scheme of things, like Gina, who was driving her truck across country, that's not an option. And, you know, for people who are driving for work, you know, who don't have the luxury of squeezing every mile out because they got to get to the next appointment, et cetera, that's not going to work. So, you know, yeah, where we can conserve, we absolutely should. But when it comes to, you know, changing from the wrong stuff, which is burning oil, to the right stuff, you know, it does make things easier because you don't have to feel guilty about burning alcohol when you need to go to the movies with your kids that night to keep them from screaming, right? It's like, that it's not an extra trip when you're running on alcohol. It's perfectly okay. It's good for the environment. It doesn't foul the air, and it doesn't ruin your pocketbook. So, you know, yes, conserve, and also let's solve the dang problem.
Robert in Lubbock, Texas, home of Buddy Holly. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I don't understand why Mr. Bloom thinks that ethanol is a clean energy source. And the reason I say that is because of Mr. Pedzik of UC Berkeley, California.
Yes, he's a chemical engineer who works for oil companies.
Right. But let me just finish, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, we know that it's about 1.7 output-to-input ratio, right? That it's better than the input. The output is about 1.7 times.
That's right.
But what we don't take into account is to grow the corn, that you have to use up the soil, the water. You must also account for the wastewater, polluted nitrogen, phosphates, fertilizers, as well as the pesticides and herbicides. Then when you calculate it all in the inputs, you get about a 65% loss in energy plus your pollution. Now,
how can you account as this clean
energy? I'm just asking a question.
I'm going to use the same study you're talking about, which is Ted Patzik and Dr. Pimentel, who did the study.
And what was that study?
It's Dr. Pimentel is actually the main architect, and Ted Patzik is his new assistant. I've worked with Dr. Pimentel and talked with him, and you know, he actually has done very good work where he shows we don't need the pesticides, we don't need the herbicides if we grow our corn organically. And when we do that, we save over 30% of the energy needed to grow corn. Now, the studies that Patzik and Pimentel did accounted for every single thing that went into making corn. So all the things that the caller has just brought up were included in the study. Every single thing, including the amount of energy it took to feed the policeman in the town, that was part of the infrastructure. I mean, they looked for every possible thing to throw into this thing, and they still came out with alcohol being positive energy-wise. Now, that study is actually, you know, well, let's just say there's a lot of excess stuff in it, and that alcohol production is actually a lot better than that. But corn is not the main game here. Corn happens to be something we have a surplus of, and that's why we make alcohol from it. But if we're using cattails, fodder beets, waste products, you know, all of that kind of stuff, we're talking about many times the energy out for energy in. And oil, something they make in Lubbock, I think, you know, every gallon of oil that you bring out of the ground, you lose 20% of it in the process of transportation and refining. So it's automatically negative 20%. Where alcohol, even in the worst studies, is positive 70%. So, you know, when we have a lot of flack in the air, it's hard to see what the truth is. The point is, alcohol is solar energy. And Dr. Pimentel himself, I have it on tape, you know, I think we have a clip of it on our website, where he says, yes, Dave, small-scale alcohol makes absolute sense. And he shakes my hand on tape and agrees with me. So, you know.
You got him, huh?
You know, well, you know, he's a really, when you get him away from the press and you can actually talk with him, you get whole quotes, not sound bites, you know, that the oil companies have clipped and then distributed. He's actually a very good ecologist. And when he talks with me about it, he says, yes, small scale alcohol makes sense. And when I criticize alcohol, I'm only talking about the biggest plants. And, you know, he's got somewhat of a point there, even though he's a little off base, but he totally agrees with me that the solution is small-scale alcohol.
We'll go to John in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, John, thank you for calling. Go ahead. Well,
thank you, and good morning. George, I before I ask Dr. or Mr. Bloom a question, I just want you to know that you're really a national treasure. You do more good for this country than all levels of government combined. My question is the cattails, what kind of weather do they need? If we're in a cold climate, do we need to clean our sewage in a greenhouse?
Well, you know, cattails grow all the way from the Arctic Circle to the tropics. They're one of the few pandemic plants, meaning they grow kind of everywhere. The season's short.
They have to be near marshes or water, though, don't they?
They don't actually. You can actually grow them like a crop, but then you got to deal with weeds. One of the reasons why cattails do so well in standing water is weeds don't. And so the cattails can grow without any kind of need to control the weeds. And that saves a lot of labor. So, you know, if you go to our website, you'll actually see some pictures of cattail farming and stuff and some of the stuff that I pioneered back in the 80s. And, of course, if you're, you know, looking for more information on cattails for your community, like to do sewage treatment in your community, like we have a benefit coming up on December 1st in Northern California for Bridgeville, which is a community that is partially going bankrupt because of the cost of replacing its sewage treatment system. So we're doing a benefit concert there and a benefit for the town because we think the town is worth saving. And we're going to help them redesign their sewage system around cattails. The band we're having is Moon Alice, and they are contributing themselves to the benefit. But we want to show that small towns, like 1,000 towns that are along the Mississippi, that are, you know, too small to afford what the EPA requires them to do to clean their sewage, which is a reasonable request. But they can't afford it because the only thing better than military contracting is sewage treatment contracting. I mean, you're talking things that are marked up ridiculous. And so this is a way that small communities around the world can use plants to both clean their sewage and make energy. And so this is one of the main things that Bloom Distillation is doing. And, you know, you can learn more about us, of course, you know, of course, I take the risk again that George is going to burn my server, but you can get a hold of us at alcoholcanbeagas.com. And we do have a phone number for those of you who don't do the web, which is toll-free 888, you know, that toll-free number, 888-737. Oh, my God, I think I forgot
the number. Forgot your own number.
6227.
Okay. 6227. You better give that number one more time.
Oh, okay. 888-737-6227. And Lord help me if I didn't have the right number there, because someone's going to get a lot of calls.
We'll go. Well, at least you didn't do what the governor of Florida did on this meningitis scare. He gave out a toll-free number to people. Uh-huh. You know, that pharmacy that had made that tainted steroid injections.
Oh, no.
So he gives out, I mean, 12 people have died already, I think.
Oh, my God.
And he gave out a toll-free number for people who needed help, and he reversed the numbers. It was like a porn site.
You know, the last time I gave out a phone number on this show, George, on your show, they had to shut down my phone number in Santa Cruz because you shut down the switchboard.
Yeah, it hits the region. Let's get Nederland, Colorado's Brian on real fast. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, George, thanks to you and everybody at Coast for taking my call.
Sure thing.
And, David, I've got an old Honda Civic in 93, and some of my friends got even older. It's a four-cylinder. Some got even older. Rubber fittings and stuff, is that sometimes a problem on those old cars?
Not since 83. And if you've got a fuel pump from 1983 and you're going to complain to me that it fails with alcohol, I'm going to say, forget it. You got your money's worth out of it since 83. But since 83, everything has been alcohol tolerant. And I have a bonus news for you with a 93. If you have a vehicle between about 89 and 94, when they changed the whole computer system in cars for smog, those computers are too stupid to know that you're putting alcohol in it, and they just keep adjusting. So you can run E85 right from the pump in your car without any changes whatsoever. I was in a 93 Cadillac in South Dakota with Ori Swayze. We were doing 100 miles an hour up the highway in South Dakota, running on E85 in an unmodified Cadillac. So, you know, that year is from 90 to 94 are really good for just running on alcohol straight. You can find where the alcohol is on our website with our station finder up there in the right-hand corner. Just click on that. It'll tell you where alcohol is available to pump in your area. And again, that's at alcoholcanbeagas.com.
David, keep doing what you're doing and appreciate you being on the program. Website, alcoholcanbeagas. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.